comedian Julia Sweeney made the gender-ambiguous character Pat famous in the 90s. Remember that character from Saturday Night Live?
Not quite sure how to address you.
No formalities here. Just call me Pat.
Now Julia Sweeney's back with a stand-up show at Second City in Chicago. Plus, if you've ever been to the Field Museum, it turns out you can take it home with you. Whether it's fossils, artifacts, even a replica of a T-Rex skull. Here's WBEZ's Monica Ng.
But when I went to the lower level of the Field Museum and saw this room that just goes back for rows and rows and shelves of boxes, I was amazed. I was like a kid in a candy shop.
But first, you may remember musician Todd Kessler from The Voice. Now he's touring all over the Midwest with a new album called About Memory.
You are young, stay that way, because someday you'll be a man.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. We'll get started after the latest news. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. When you listen to the roots rock of Chicago-based singer-songwriter Todd Kessler, you might think you may be hearing someone from country or even another era. What you definitely won't think is you're hearing someone who's competed in front of an audience of millions for fame and fortune. Yet Todd Kessler did have a taste of that when he was on The Voice back in 2012. Here he is being chosen by CeeLo Green.
So Maggie, I wish I'd never seen your
a great match in Todd Kessler.
He sounded so smooth, and I think that you would work perfectly for me.
Now, with reality TV A Distant Memory, he's got a new album out called About Memory. We sat down with him while he was in Champaign, but he's performing this Sunday at Space in Evanston at 7 p.m. You can find other tour dates at his website, toddkesslermusic.com. Hey, Todd, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
Thanks for having me, Nyla.
So this new album is called About Memory, which is also the name of one of the tracks.
True.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the name?
So I was listening to the radio, listening to an interview show. This was back in 2015. I was on my way to a gig, and the interviewer was talking with someone. I'm not sure I remember who even. And they were having this conversation about memory. The person being interviewed had lost a parent at a young age, and he was talking about how funny it was how the things he remembered very clearly versus the things he didn't remember very clearly. And the things that he remembered clearly were the little details, whereas the big things were harder to remember. And it just got me thinking about the idea of memory and how fluid it is, and how kind of every time we remember something, we're changing it a little bit to kind of fit our story. And that kind of that turned into the song About Memory. And then I started realizing I was writing all these songs, and I had some of these other older songs that kind of fit in with this idea of memory in general, whether that's looking back or thinking about the future and how it relates to the present or the past. And so that was kind of the genesis of that song, and then also the theme that turned out to be the album as well.
And so maybe we should hear a little bit of it, if you don't mind.
Sure,
do you
wanna,
so I think the first song you're going to play, is it Long Road to Walk?
Yeah, this song's called Long Road to Walk. It's actually not on the album, which is a little bit of a tease, I guess. I'm sorry.
This is a newer song.
Yeah, this is a newer song I've been working on. It's kind of a reaction to just the divisiveness of our culture recently.
Oh, we gotta find that spot buried in the darkness, just open our hearts, confess. Can you hear amazing grace pouring out of the pew? Oh God, what can we do to find peace? We just need a little light. Shine on, keep on praying with our feet. See your songs. There's no use try and cover up our scars. It's a long road to walk, no matter how far. It's a long road to walk, no matter how far. With all that can divide us, Let it bring us back to justice. Or else we confuse what's weak for toughness. Can you hear hallelujah coming from the gates? Oh Lord, is it too late to find peace? We just need a little light to shine on. We'll keep on praying with our feet, sing your songs. Risk no use, try and cover up our scars. To walk no matter how far. It's a long road to walk no matter how far. We may get lost, we may lose our way. Nothing good ever came easy. And if history has ever shown, you and I, we are not alone. What gives me hope, what gives me peace? Shall be released. Just need a little light, shine on. We'll keep on praying with our feet, sing your songs. We just need a little light to shine on. We'll keep on praying with our feet, sing your songs. It's a long road to walk, no matter how far. It's a long road to walk, no matter how far.
Thank you. That's Todd Kessler, who's in studio with me. He's a Chicago-based singer-songwriter. He's in town in the Champaign area, but we're catching up with him here in Urbana. Todd, I wonder, as you were playing that, and I was thinking about what you said about how you sort of wrote that in response to where we're at right now as a country, and I couldn't help think of what, very different style of music than yours, but Bruno Mars said when he won the Grammy about, I think he was talking about his song Finesse and just all of his last album and just how he really felt like he wanted to bring some joy into the world. How much of your art and your music now is sort of a reflection of that, of just trying to put something out there in response to what's going on?
So generally, a lot. As a singer-songwriter, I mean, I'm reacting to the world around me. Interestingly enough, this last album was a step away from that, from doing that for so long. And I had previously been recording with my band, Todd Kessler and the New Folk, and our album from 2012, which came out right before I was on The Voice. A lot of those songs were reactionary to what was going on then and previously, and then all of my previous recordings had a lot of that. And then this album, I felt like I needed to get away from that.
Did you want to take a break from it?
I needed to take a break from it. To be quite honest with you, I had a lot of these songs on this record are really old for me, and I just didn't have an outlet to get them out for a while. I was recording with my band, and we were touring, and, you know, the sound was a little bit different, and I was, you know, those songs were a little bit more reactionary, and I needed to get back to a little bit more of, you know, some love songs and some things that were a little less worldly and more from my experience. But in general, that's a big part of my art and what inspires me on a regular basis.
And so this album about memory, where did you record it?
So I recorded, we started out in L.A. I worked with a couple of producers out there, and we did the bulk of it in a week. We were at a couple different studios. One was called New Monkey, which was made famous from, it was Elliot Smith's old studio. And then the other studio we were at, I think they call it Electric Compound. It was one of the producer, Rand Jackson, his home studio. And then we kind of, through bits and pieces, finished it over the next few months, a lot of it remotely. So my producer was in L.A., I was in Chicago, but then we would send tracks to Nashville for someone to do a guitar part there. We did get back together in the studio a couple times in Chicago to put some finishing touches on. But the bulk of it and kind of the energy of it was captured in Los Angeles.
So you spent a fair amount of time touring. Of course, you had your experience on TV mm-hmm. and reality TV with The Voice. You've been in a recording studio, as we were just talking about. Where do you feel most at home as an artist?
On stage. I mean, that is the lifeblood of what I do. A lot of people can make their art in the studio and then that's it. They don't ever have to go on a stage and their songs can go viral and do what it's going to do. For me, as a singer-songwriter, the best way to connect is with my audience. I'm on stage and they're listening to what I have to say. I love being in the studio, though. That's where I get to try all the fun stuff. But as an artist, really, just the stage performing.
Can you play us another song?
I can. This one's very different than the last one in terms of theme.
This is called Someday You'll Be a Man.
Someday You'll Be a Man, actually.
Yeah, kind of fitting more, though, with this album that you're talking
this,
about.
Yeah, this song, this is not about memory, though I started recording it with my band. We were working on an album, and it didn't work out, and so I started it again on this project. This was written when my now 5-year-old son was 6 months old, and I was putting him down for a nap. And was just kind of thinking how easy his life is as a 6-month-old. And so it's kind of full circle because he's here with me on this trip. He's back at the Airbnb with my wife. But didn't think he'd be able to handle this situation. But he'd be talking too much. But yeah, this is called Someday You'll Be a Man.
Young, stay that way, because son, someday you'll be a man. You are young, stay that way, because son, someday you'll be a man. So sleep while you can, drink while you can, smoke while you can, because someday you'll be a man. Got no bills to pay, you're gonna wish you stayed that way. Someday you'll be a man. You ain't got no bills to pay, you're gonna wish you stayed that way. Someday you'll be a man. So sleep while you can, drink while you can, smoke while you can, because someday you'll be a man. If there's one thing I could tell you, stay on while you can, because someday you'll be a man. Because someday you'll be a man.
That's Someday You'll Be a Man by Todd Kessler, who's in studio with me here in Urbana. His new album is called About Memory. That's a track off of that. So we're almost out of time, but I just wanted you to get a chance to play one last song. We can go out on that. The album is About Memory. The artist is Todd Kessler. He's based in the Chicago area. You can find other tour dates at his website, toddkesslermusic.com. What are you going to play for us as we say goodbye to you here?
For one more song, I'm going to play a song called One More Note.
Thanks for being here with me.
Thanks so much.
One more note, one more breath, one more go is all I get this time around. One more night to sing a song, see the light dance along an empty floor I've come to know quite well. I've been lost underneath its spell. Just for now, a bid to you farewell. Dig my heels in, do my best. Try to forget all the rest. Remember my good intentions. Caught up in the whirlwind of, forgot about my faith in love to make the whole thing disappear. I've been lost, the fog's begun to clear. Just for now, I patiently wait here. If every note is my last, I light a fire, strike a match. Tomorrow come, my voice is lost. At least I'll have had one more song. One more note, one more breath, one more go is all I get this time around. This time around. This time. This time around.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. If you're a fan of Saturday Night Live from the 90s, then you recognize Pat, the gender-ambiguous character played by cast member Julia Sweeney. And actually now, in 2018, Pat's gender fluidity is as timely as ever. Julia Sweeney, too, is also back with a fresh stand-up workshop called Older and Wiser at Second City in Chicago. The comedian, actor, and author is based in the suburbs of Chicago and has spent her time since Saturday Night Live exploring issues like family, cancer, and religion through her comedy. Her monologue, God Said Ha, about her and her brother's struggle with cancer, was turned into a film produced by Quentin Tarantino. She also wrote a memoir called If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother, and another monologue, Letting Go of God, about becoming an atheist, that was made into a film for Showtime. I spoke with her originally back in January. She joined us from Northwestern University in Evanston. Her show is still running at Second City. Julia Sweeney, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
So you're calling the show Older and Wiser a workshop. Before we get into the material, I'd actually never been to something like this before. You offered a disclaimer to us in the audience that you're working through this material. How does this whole process work?
Well, first of all, it's actually older and wider. You're so sweet to think that it's older and wiser.
Oh, right.
Older and wiser is good. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I've always worked on my shows. I mean, I don't know how anyone does it any other way. It's just that when I did it before, I was doing it in New York and LA, where I had relationships with a whole bunch of different theaters. So I just kind of went around and, you know, I would book 5 Thursdays at the Knitting Factory or, you know, like, and then I would just get up like for Letting Go of God and just do what I was doing that you saw. I just have notes and I have stories I've told in my head, but I haven't really said them out loud. And I don't know how they'll feel once they're on their feet. And there's just no way to do a stage show without doing that kind of workshop work. And so when Second City, I happened to be there for another long story, but I was spending a lot of time there. And And I'm not from Second City. A lot of people think I am, but I'm not. But so we started talking about it, and I said, I think he'll do a show. Maybe I'll do a workshop. And they said, well, we have these workshop spaces. So that was really exciting. So that's how I got to do it. But I always feel worried about the... In fact, actually, this weekend, I'm going to try to not have a disclaimer like I had for your show. Because I don't want the... I don't want to start with an apology. That's always bad. On the other hand, I really don't want people to think they're coming to a finished show. This really is like experiments that I'm doing on the audience to see if they laugh.
Well, I think they can tell that from the space, right? Because you go into space and it's not like your typical Second City stand-up space. It's a smaller room. They're like... What, did they find the worst chairs at Second City?
I know.
Yes. The room? Like, it is a little odd.
It is
the chair arrangement.
It's 50 seats, and it's just sort of their odds and ends chairs. But you know what? I was just telling my daughter this morning, because I'm not sure how I'll open the show once I get it ready. And I said, you know what? If they just kept me in that room and actually just officially opened it, I'd be perfectly happy. Because I like the 50. I like 50 people is a good number of people. I like it.
Well, and I also wonder, I think it's a lot easier for you to read the room. And so stand-up is a newer thing for you. You also talked about how it's a different space for you. I don't know I was there when you were talking about holding the microphone and how felt. And how you were trying to look casual holding the microphone.
See, that's my other thing I'm going to try to do this weekend, is to not talk about how I never hold the microphone. Just actually try to hold the microphone.
Is it uncomfortable for you to do stand-up?
It is different. Well, stand-up has changed actually a lot since I moved to Chicago 10 years ago. It's much more storytelling-y. I think The Moth and people like Mike Birbiglia, it has moved more towards storytelling, which is closer to what I was doing. On the other hand, I really was doing monologues, and I'm realizing how much fat I had in it. Like, so what I like about stand-up is you're really... trying to put down where the laugh is and then cut out every piece of information that isn't necessary to get that laugh. And that is not how I thought of monologues. Like, I just thought of the story I was trying to tell and the emotional impact I was trying to create. So it is different. On the other hand, it also feels like I was really close. Like, I would say if you think of stand-up as the highway, I was the service road right next to the highway, and I was really pretty close to doing stand-up. So I'm excited about trying to see if I can really
get off the service ramp.
Right, get off the service ramp and onto the highway.
Get off the service ramp and onto the Dan Ryan.
Yeah, exactly.
Stand-up. And then doing the experiments on us, the audience, is that different than when you're doing another act? Like, because I feel like comedians are always reading the room, right? They're always taking the temperature.
Well, in some ways it's easier for me because I came up through the Groundlings in Los Angeles, which is like Second City, but in LA, and it's all sketch comedy. And then when I first started doing like sort of monologue-y personal story material, the thing that threw me the most was that the audience wasn't laughing. Like, I had to actually tolerate people not laughing. And then that was my big learning curve for monologues. Like, it's okay. You can feel that they're still into it. Like, when you're in comedy, it's hard to know if the audience is into you if they're not laughing.
Right.
You know? But I did feel like I learned that, or I pretended they were into it enough that I just kept moving forward or something like that. And then, so now in some ways, just looking for the laugh, even though I'm trying to get to more serious material too, and I'm trying to do a combination of stories / jokes, it's actually kind of a relief because the results you're trying to produce from your experiments are very clear. They're laughs. In some ways, that's easier than doing a monologue.
Well, and then the whole idea of telling more of the stories and the jokes, I had a story that I wanted to share with you, but like this requires a little bit of a setup, right?
Sure.
So you're perhaps most famous to many of our listeners for your portrayal of Pat, who was the gender ambiguous Saturday Night Live character. Some of our producers were very young, and I don't even know how old they were in the 90s, but we'll talk about that in a minute. We have a clip of this for people who have not heard Pat before.
Who's this, your girlfriend?
Yeah, that's Dina.
She's pretty.
Thanks. So, do you have a girlfriend? Are you married?
I was going to be married, but it all fell apart.
Oh, boy, what happened?
I don't know. Ask my ex-fiance. I can't talk about this anymore. I guess it's that time of the month.
Oh, okay.
Bills.
That's a clip of Saturday Night Live, and the character Pat, that actor Julia Sweeney, is with me now. She's got a new stand-up act at Second City in Chicago. It's actually running through March 18th. And Julia, you bring up this concept of Pat in your act now, but it's in the context of your daughter.
Uh-huh.
First realizing, first of all, that you told the story to the show, that the show I was at, where your daughter came home one day and she was like, "Mom, are you famous? Were you on Saturday Night Live?"
Yeah, well, first she had never even heard of Saturday Night Live. Anyway, so yeah, she was on the playground and some kids came up and said, "Your mom is famous. She was on Saturday Night Live. She played this really ugly, androgynous character that became famous called Pat." And Mulan was like, "Huh-uh." And then she went home and asked me, and I had to say, "That's right. That's your mom."
And then do you remember you shared the response that she had where she said, "Mom, were you famous for making fun of intersex people?"
Well, yes. I know. She goes, well, at first I show her the movie and she's looking at me through the whole movie. She's so disgusted and sad that this is her mom. And then she goes, "I really feel like this movie is kind of making fun of intersex people." And then I kind of had a meltdown about it because I was like, "Oh my God, was I the Al Jolson of androgyny?" And then that was so horrifying. It was like, what? Oh no. And then I had a huge defensive, you know, rage going in my head for days afterwards, like, that's actually the opposite. I actually got a lot of letters from people who felt like they were glad that I was doing Pat, and Pat was embraced by the gay community, and I was the, you know, I was the head of three different gay pride parades in New York, like, on and on and on. Like, I couldn't be more defensive. But then I had to kind of calm down and think about it, you know, like, well, the thing is, when I created Pat, I didn't think of Pat as, you didn't know Pat's gender. I was trying to just do a really annoying guy, but I really wasn't a good enough actor to pull off really being a male. So I threw in a joke at the end. This is when I was at the Groundlings, where you just didn't know what the gender of Pat was, just to kind of make up for my lack of acting ability. And then the audience really responded to that. So then that kind of took off. And I realized when I was showing Mulan the movie that I've always been really proud of Pat. And I thought Pat was interesting in a lot of different ways, even though Pat was so annoying. But if I'd known that Pat was going to become so popular, I probably would have made Pat more likable. Like the part that was fun for me to play was how annoying and all these qualities that really could be for a man or a woman. It really didn't have anything to do with Pat being intersex or androgynous. It was just annoying personal qualities. And that was my motivation to do the character. But then Pat became known for being, you know, androgynous. That was the joke. And then I got kind of put off by people who were too into that. Like, I would meet people going, I just can't stand it. You've got to tell me, what is it? And I'd go, well, does it even matter? Like,
well, it was like a Rorschach test. Well, and also because it's such a different conversation that we would have now than we would have had, you know, 20 years ago. And I mean, is the joke really on the people in those scenes who can't tell who Pat is?
Well, yeah. In fact, that was part of my big defensive screed that I was having in my head for the week after my daughter realized that I was Pat. Because I kept thinking, well, every joke, every laugh we got was not, I mean, the laughs that Pat got were about Pat being annoying. The real laughs of the sketches and the film were all about everyone around Pat not being able to tolerate it, that they couldn't know if Pat was a man or a woman. That's where the comedy lay. So it really, the joke was kind of on them, but I hated this idea that I might be remembered as somebody who played an androgynous character where I was making fun of that. But it is, speaking of adjacent, it is so close to it that it's so clear that that could easily have happened. But anyway, yeah. So I suddenly, because of Mulan, had to think through all these things that I had only vaguely thought through before.
Well, now you're older and maybe not, as you say, should we say wider or wiser?
I am. I'm absolutely both wiser and wider.
But you joke about, and this was also made me laugh. You joked about being called matronly in kindergarten.
Yes.
So do you feel like have you always felt old in a way?
Yeah, I think I always, well, first of all, I always was drawn to older people. I always had friends who were older, like way older. It started out with my grandma, my dad's mom, but even now I look back on it, like when I went to college, I was in a sorority, which is completely wrong for me, and I had to get out of it. It was not the right social environment for me. I didn't really understand what I was getting myself into. But at college, I befriended this guy who was 60 years old, who his wife had died, and I met him in the cafeteria at the University of Washington, and we ate lunch together every day for 3 years. Like, he became like this incredibly close friend of mine. And when I look back on it, then when I started my first job as an accountant and I was in New York City, not my boss, but one of the people at his level, which was higher than me, who was this older, wonderful Jewish guy. He had never married, never really left, grew up in Manhattan, never left, liked theater. I liked theater. And we became best friends. Like, and that's in my 20s, that's who I was hanging out with. So I always felt, I guess, older. Like, I was related to older people. So that was what I was trying to get across, is that I feel so happy to finally be the right age that I've been waiting my whole life to be.
My guest is Julia Sweeney. We're talking to her about her new act, Older and Wider. There. We got it. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, Julia, I feel like you talked a lot about you've made your sort of your comedy after leaving Saturday Night Live, you know, going back to Pat, dealing with topics that might make people uncomfortable hasn't been something you've ever shied away from, right? And after leaving Saturday Night Live, I feel like your work only seemed to get more personal. Was that intentional?
No, it was accidental. I mean, it really started because after I left Saturday Night Live and the Pat movie came out, it was a huge bomb. And then my brother Mike got cancer, and then I got cancer, and my parents moved in with me, and I had this whole terrible year. It was really because of a couple of friends, one of which was Kathy Griffin, who's still a friend. And she kept saying, "You're so funny in conversation. Why aren't you just getting up on stage?" And I had a kind of snobby attitude about it. Like, no, my art is to be characters. You know, my personality is my gift to my friends. You know, like I don't share my personal life on stage. I had a thing about it. But because I was in such an extreme situation with the cancer and everything and my parents driving me crazy and I needed a release, I started going to this club called Uncabaret in Los Angeles on Sunday nights, where Kathy was performing and just starting to figure out if she could do the same thing. And it was really like Margaret Cho and Janine Garofalo and me and Kathy Griffin were mostly the women who were doing it. And Beth Lapidus ran it, so it was very female-centric. And it felt more like group therapy with really funny people, like more than it was stand-up. And I just got comfortable telling these stories. And then at the end of the year, Beth Lapidus's husband at the time, Greg Miller, had recorded all these shows. And he's the one who said to me, "You should listen to these because you've got some really amazing stories over the year." And well, at the time I was just trying to get a job. I thought, I'll get up on stage and tell a bunch of funny stories at like a something where casting directors can come to, you know, like as material, and then they'll see that I should be cast in TV shows or something. And then I got up and did like an hour of material of the cancer stuff. And everyone overwhelmingly was saying, "Forget about getting cast in something. Just, this is what you should be doing. You should actually be doing this." So it wasn't intentional in any way.
Stay tuned. We'll continue this conversation with Julia Sweeney just after this short break. You're listening to The 21st.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. My guest is Julia Sweeney of Saturday Night Live fame, but she's also lots of other things, an actor and author, and now has an act at Second City in Chicago called Older and Wider. I saw her show and spoke with her back in January. You can still catch it if you're in the Chicago area. After she left Saturday Night Live, Julia wound up performing at a club in L.A. called Uncabaret, and it turned out to be a place with many other female comedians like Margaret Cho and Kathy Griffin. Given both that experience and news headlines about women in comedy over the past year, I asked her what it was like to be a woman in that environment and whether things have changed over the years.
You know, for some reason, I'm able to have this kind of bifurcated awareness of the world at all times where I'm in a field and yet I don't know that much about the field at the same time in ways that would always surprise everyone and myself. And the reason it relates to this is, even though in that environment, with all those women that I mentioned and this woman who was running at Beth Lapidus, and there was a lot of guys too, a lot of guys. Patton Oswalt was there almost every week. We were all kind of learning what we were doing. But because I was in that environment, and because I don't actually watch stand-up until last June, I really had probably seen Bob Newhart, Phyllis Diller, and Bill Cosby a full hour of a show. I mean, like, I just don't watch stand-up that much. I mean, of course, I'd see clips, and on Saturday Night Live, I knew the main comedians, you know, but I wasn't particularly a person who watched a lot of stand-up. That I didn't even realize until last June, when I decided I wanted to try to do stand-up, and I was going to watch one stand-up special every day all summer on Netflix, which is what I did last summer. I actually didn't know that it was so male-dominated until last summer. I was like, where's all the women? It's like, you turn on Netflix and you go to the comedy page, there's like 10 women for every 100 guys. And they're very specific too. They're very young and they're sexual. But I'm just saying, I really did not realize how few women were in it. And then because I was watching it all summer, my daughter was watching it with me. And she was new to it too, but now she's 18. So last summer she was 17. And the cutest thing Mulan said to me was, Mom, you're really going to do great in stand-up because look, they have hardly any women on Netflix doing comedy
specials. Such a low bar, Mom.
So they really need people like you. And it was so cute. And I almost wanted to be silent for a second after she said it. And I go, oh, Mulan, that's not because there's not funny women. That's because the business wants it to be the way it is. Believe me. There's plenty of funny women out there. They're just not getting heard. And that's when it was so funny. Like, here I am, 58 years old. I'm like, oh, wow, this is a very, I don't know if you've heard, but this is a very male-dominated field. Like, I really did not realize it was so extreme.
Do you think that's changing now? I'm thinking about all the conversations. I'm just thinking about even in Hollywood with women in the film industry. Do you think that comedy is also maybe changing?
I do, but in some ways, it's like I said, it's not just, it's bigger forces at work than just, like, say, pointing out gatekeepers who purposely keep funny women out. It's actually, I think, a bigger thing. Also, I think, I mean, what I'm saying is that couldn't change right away. I think it needs, you know, more time. I think because of, like, the Me Too movement and people being kind of woke about not just the harassment, but how unbalanced it is, it's going to help a little. But the cynical part of me just is waiting for the whole movement to get co-opted by some soft drink or something and the whole thing to fall apart.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, like, it's because I already feel like it's, well, we'll see. I want to be optimistic. I want to be optimistic, but I'm unfortunately kind of cynical about it really making a difference.
I'm talking with Julia Sweeney. If you don't recognize that voice, the comedian has a new act at Second City in Chicago. It's actually running through March 18th. You mentioned talking about cancer. You've talked about cancer. You talked about your atheism. Is anything off limits?
I was going to say my atheism. It's like my daughter. Let's talk about my atheism. She's so cute. No, nothing's off limits, I guess. Well, yes. Now I'm thinking, of course there's things that are off limits. There are things off limits. First of all, wildly untrue things. And that might seem obvious, but actually, like, I was working yesterday with a friend and who's a comedian who's sort of, this is going to be so terrible, but he's just trying to help me work through this, my own Me Too story, and to see, make it funny and not freak the audience out with it. And one of his suggestions required Mulan to have an attitude about it that would be counterposed to my attitude about it, sort of like I do with the Pat thing. But that thing's absolutely true. And I realized I just can't do that. That is taboo to me. I can exaggerate or embellish, but I can't wholly invent their attitude. So to me, that's taboo. It really does have to be true. And then, yeah, I would say taboo subjects are, well, first of all, I have a family I have to live with, my husband and daughter. Like, my parents were fair game, I think, because I didn't choose them, you know, and I think your parents are always fair game for comedy. But I think your immediate family, you have to live with those people. You can't just be throwing them under the bus up there. So that to me is probably the taboo thing. Anything about me, though, cancer, sexual assault, atheism, politics, I don't think anything else is taboo.
Well, if you go to see Older and Wider, perhaps you will hear more about Julia Sweeney. It's on through March 18th right now, running some Fridays and Sunday evenings, and possibly maybe extended, Julia?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, is if it gets good enough, then I'll probably book a bunch more shows in April, and then we may really open it in May.
Julia, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nyla. This is good. I'm so excited I got to talk to you. I listened to you for a long, long time and always loved it.
Oh, thank you. If you've ever visited the Field Museum in downtown Chicago, you probably recall Sue, the 40-foot-long T-Rex who used to greet you right at the main entrance. While you may know Sue, you might not know you can actually take her home with you. Well, sort of. The N.W. Harris Learning Collection at the Field Museum actually allows its members to take home different artifacts from the museum, including a replica of a full-size T-Rex skull like Sue's. The collection's online catalog has more than 450 items, ranging from that skull to 300-million-year-old fossils to ancient Egyptian board games to a box of preserved flies. WBEZ reporter Monica Ng went to the Field Museum to check out the collection, and I spoke with her about this back in January. Hi, Monica. Welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks, Nyla.
So, Monica, you wrote about the room where all of these artifacts are stored. What was it like in this space where finding out that, and also just finding out that you could rent things from the Field Museum? Who knew that?
It was a big shock. You know, I've been in Chicago my whole life, and I had no idea. But I was researching a question about whether or not the Art Institute actually lent out its paintings back in the day. And I stumbled upon this. And FYI, the Art Institute did lend out its paintings for many, many years, but that's a whole other story. But when I went to the lower level of the Field Museum and saw this room that just goes back for rows and rows and shelves of boxes, I was amazed. I was like a kid in a candy shop. So many cool things you can take home.
And who can take them home? Anyone?
Well, it used to be, when this started more than 100 years ago, it was just for Chicago school teachers. This, you know, was something where they could bring in a replica of a volcano or fossils or animals or the way plastic is made or the way coal mines work. They could bring these dioramas into their classroom. But then, I don't know, sometime in the last 50 years, no one at the museum quite knows, they just opened it up to the public quietly. And suddenly, you know, any Joe, Tom, Dick, and Harry could go in there and walk out with this stuff and borrow it for a couple weeks.
How much does it cost?
Well, you can get these packages. You can get a package to rent out one thing for $10 or 40 things for $100, which, in case you don't know math, breaks down to $2.50 to rent some of these really interesting exhibits, dioramas, specimens, and bring them home for a couple weeks.
And then what happens if you don't bring them back? Do they have your credit card on file, or I wonder?
Well, to become a member of this N.W. Harris Learning Collection, you do pay $10 for your membership. And they do have information on you, because the $10 also pays for, in case, you know, maybe you chip something or break it. They said, you know, minimal fees for stuff that's damaged. But they said that they've had a really good history of people returning them and keeping them safe. But again, they said they're happy to fix, you know, whatever ever accidentally gets broken. But people tend to return this stuff.
Monica, people might not remember this or recall this, but the Field Museum has a vast store of archives. Most of it, I'm not sure, you can probably know what percentage of the Field Museum is actually on display. Is that part of what's behind here, of what's being lent out?
It is not. And, you know, I have been interviewing a whole bunch of museum folks, and they say that you usually see less than 1% of what the museums actually have. And the same is true for the Field Museum. But here, this is a separate collection from their permanent collection. This originally got assembled when N.W. Harris, of the old Harris Bank, for those who remember that bank, he had a bunch of stuff that he wanted to donate to the museum, anthropological stuff, scientific stuff. And then over the years, they had other things at the museum whose provenance they couldn't quite pinpoint. And so they said, hey, let's put it in the N.W. Harris collection. And it's just gotten bigger and bigger. There are about 450 dioramas alone. But then when you add everything else in, it's about more than 1,500 items.
And what kind of things are there? We mentioned a couple things. There's a replica of a T-Rex skull like Sue's, which must be huge.
That one's the only one that's outside of the $10 renting. I think it's actually $200 if you want to bring that to your next party. And you do need a pickup truck to take it home. They also have, you know, 300-million-year-old fossils. They have a lot of things where you can learn, let's say, wild Chicago. It's got a raccoon pelt and deer antlers and a real rat and a squirrel in a tube. And kids love looking at that. And different insects that are native to the Chicago area. A lot of the stuff you can touch. They have a whole African instruments box where you can play a thumb piano or a balafone or a shaker. They have these great old industrial dioramas that tell you all the byproducts of corn. They tell you how linoleum is made. My favorite is beef and its byproducts, which obviously came from the time when Chicago was a big meatpacking area, and we had all of these offshoot industries for the hide and the hoofs and the blood and the intestines of animals. They have this whole thing about bears where they have a bear pelt, a bear claw, and artificial bear feces that you can touch, and they're really squishy. They have an enormous wild turkey that a lot of people like to reserve for Thanksgiving, so get your reservation in now.
I imagine a stuffed wild turkey, right? It's a kind of like...
Right.
Yeah.
Not alive. But it's enormous, and it's just, you know, you're going to need a big car to take that home. I mean, anthropological stuff, biological stuff, birds, so many birds that you can take home. If you're a birder and you want to look up close at a taxidermied version of the bird you'd always wanted to see, it's likely there. The gray fox is one of the most popular. They say everybody wants to take the gray fox home and look at him because he's so cute. He's just sitting there looking at you.
Monica, did you take anything home?
I haven't yet. I was thinking for a certain 12-year-old's birthday, I would get him a 40-item card so that he could just take these home and then, you know, really encourage kids to learn about these things or just show it off at a dinner party. The beef and the byproducts box could be great.
Yeah, that would be great to pull out the intestines during dinner. I think that would make you very popular.
You know, a tea party, this whole thing about how tea is made, it's great.
WBEZ's Monica Ng. They'll have a video up, I believe, on their website. We'll tweet that out when that's up about all of the things that you can rent from the Field Museum. There's a story as well. We'll tweet that link out if you follow us at 21ST Show. WBEZ's Curiosity reporter, Monica Ng. Monica, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
That does it for us today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. If you have Alexa, we're easy to find. Tell her, ask NPR One to play The 21st. All of those links, directions for Alexa, and every other way to contact us. If you want to send us an email, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, if you'd like to figure out all of our social media handles, you can just remember our website. That's 21stshow.org. Speaking of social media, if you follow us on Twitter, our handle is 21stshow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. When we're not on air, you can follow us for the latest in Illinois news. If you search for us on Facebook, search for The 21st to like us. You can also comment on what we're working on. You can see the things we're reading. You can post questions or comments you'd like us to ask on air. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.